Episode number 314.
And not think like, well, the minute I set up this training program and they shove everybody through it, everything's going to be awesome. Because what happens to those businesses is 5 years later, they're like, why did quality decline? Why does everything suck? Why are all the customers leave, right? And it's like, well, because you never really gave the thing of yourself to the company that really made it successful in the beginning. You just kind of walled yourself off behind this thing.
Welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Hop, where we talk about life, dreams, social media, and business.
Well, hello and welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Huff. Folks, you know your boy is fired up, ready to bring you some fuego in your day and bringing you an expert in the game of insights, not only on your business, whether he's worked with Fortune 50 companies or startups. This dude is working with high-level professionals and he has 20 years of experience. I'm bringing you a legend in the game, Sean Campbell. Sean, are you ready to bring Be Real?
Yep, absolutely.
Let's go, Sean. You've been mentoring and educating business professionals for over 20 years. Whether it's a huge startup like we talked about, guys, or you're a small, you know, students even, and is even his team at the Cascade team. And you know, bottom line is he's helped professional services firm owners, and his work is spanning all different areas. But really, at the end of the day, it's helping you understand growth of delivery, sales, marketing, operations, especially inside professional services firms, whether you're a lawyer or an accountant. I can even think of, you know, Real Time. We're a services firm, but, you know, not necessarily in the complete profession. But I say we're a blend of a gardener and a lawyer, somewhere in the middle. And there's a lot of services firms like that. So you really help them understand the, not only the growth of their business, but then get some more sales for their business. And tell us a little bit about your journey, Sean. Tell us a little bit about were you always an entrepreneur, or what gave you this idea? Was it obviously years of experience, but did you always have an entrepreneurship mindset?
No, not really. I wanted to be a college professor. That's what I wanted to be. Before that, I wanted to be an astronomer, but Sister Mary Gale at Marian Catholic High School, you know, Catholic nuns always shoot pretty straight. They looked at my parents and said, like literally in a counseling meeting when I was a junior, I said, I'd like to be an astronomer. And she looked at my parents and said, you know, he's not good at math. Didn't even speak to me, just spoke to them, you know? And I was like, I mean, today there'd probably be a lawsuit if that happened. Right. You know, but anyway, so still have a love of astronomy, but it's more watching sci-fi now. But no, I was going to go be a college professor. I had a couple different things I might be a professor in, probably communications, maybe history. And anyway, long story short, I ended up leaving my master's degree, had found a beautiful woman to marry, still with her, you know, love being with him.
That's right there, baby.
You know, we're almost 25 years now.
Wow.
And I was going to go be a professor. To this day, she tells me that, like, I would have followed you to Waterloo. Waterloo, Iowa is where the PhD program was going to be. But anyway, like a lot of young people, I'm like, well, I think I should get a real job, right? So I went off and ended up becoming a trainer, teaching software, basically office apps and that kind of stuff, long story short, because I was kind of a computer geek on the side. Anyway, long story short, that ended in a couple jobs that led me to teaching networking and databases and programming. And then I broke off from that and went off and became an independent trainer where I was getting paid to teach classes a week. And that was how I kind of shuffle stepped into entrepreneurship, you know, went from somebody cutting a check and giving it to me through a company, you know, or all the way to like just being kind of a contractor and doing training gigs.
Right.
And the first company we had was two guys that also were independent trainers. And we co-branded to basically kind of sell our services. And probably the first step to becoming a real company back then was we looked around each other, and probably very small professional services shops could resonate with this, is that you realize you're, as one of my business partners said, trading wood and nickels, right? We were trying to like do all these things to say like, well, if you get this gig, you get all the revenue from this. And if you get this gig, you get all the revenue from this. And we decided, well, wait a minute. This is stupid. Like, we're just going to pay ourselves salaries. Mm-hmm. We're going to make this more organized. And that was really in 2001 when it got kind of more real. And then we can hit other parts of this later if you want. But then I sold that company in 2006. It grew to about 25 people. And then, I started Cascade in 2007 with one of my original business partners from the first group of two. And we've been growing Cascade Insights ever since. So that's basically where we're at now.
And what are the perfect, or like, what are your dream clients to work with? I always like to ask businesses that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate you asking. It basically a B2B technology company. And by that, we mean somebody who is really what most people think of when they think of technology. They think of software and hardware and those kinds of things. And I only clarify that because, you know, to one guy, an HVAC system that runs a 100-story office tower, well, that's technology too. And I wouldn't deny that. That is technology, but that's not what we work with. So we work with what most people, when they think of technology, they think of Googles and Amazons and software as a service and startups and that kind of stuff. And that's who we deal with, but all on the B2B side, only on business to business, not business to consumer.
And what is the big, you know, right now, obviously we're just coming out of a pandemic, guys. You know, we're hopefully getting it to the end of this thing here. This 2021 and moving into 2022, with a lot of hopefully optimism and positivity. It's going to be some pain too. What are the questions that businesses are having for you right now? What are their biggest concerns or pain points that you're helping them with?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, like, and it varies a little bit based on if they're mega guys or if they're smaller.
Right.
If they're smaller, and you know, our client base, like I said, is technology companies, but I think this is equally true of professional services, even smaller companies. They're concerned of where they're going to get kind of initial leads and revenue from, right? So much has changed in that regard, like especially for high-end professional services, right? I mean, I spent every other week in the airport, you know, before. I mean, flying to clients, to do stuff, and there's all kinds of dynamics that we don't really know how it's going to settle out. And it's not just up to the service providers. The reality is if you sold to large corporations, they may change a lot of their visitation policies post-COVID. They may change lots of dynamics. And so I think a lot of people are a little concerned about how pipelines are going to be created. You know, how fast should they go back to in-person selling?
Right.
You know, those are big things. I think marketing mixes are kind of a big deal. Lots of, particularly true for services firms or even smaller technology companies, you know, 2 years ago, they would have got a lot out of conferences and a lot out of events and in-person stuff. And here's the reality about those. I mean, if you really penciled it out, most of the time, it was an excuse to eat good food sometimes.
Get away from like, the wife. Like sometimes. Get away from the dinner.
There was a dinner after the conference where you fed yourself good food. Not during the conference, because no one eats good food during a conference.
The room service on the late night got us the good food.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, lunch at a conference is never known as good cuisine, right?
It's the $8 so none of these steak, folks steak. Would,
yeah, none of these folks would make it on MasterChef. You know, let's put it that way, right? And so... but at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of ambiguity there. And there's some things though that I think people could start on right now that would help alleviate some of those things wherever those chips fall, mm-hmm. right? I think there's definitely things you could do. Like even if you don't know the answers, there's stuff you could do today.
And I was listening to earlier this morning, Mr. Wonderful is talking about business travel, how he thinks, you know, airlines are going to be different because it's so efficient to do Zooms. Dude, I'll do like 6 podcasts a week sometimes, guys, and literally guests from all over the world, or at least all of the United States, but sometimes it's the world. They don't have to travel to me. I don't got to travel to them. It's efficient for everybody. And a conversation or productivity can happen. And we're finding that you can close big deals the same way. He's talking about his startups, you know, on Walmart calls with, you know, selling millions of dollars of contracts and cutting that cost out, and how he thinks that 85% of his business travel costs are going to be completely minimized because we have more efficient technology to do some of these things. And like you said, we don't know how the process is going to be on their end and how to adapt, you know, and we're going to maybe, you know, cut out some of the fluff. Let's just be real. So, I mean, I think it hopefully is better for some of the startups and stuff that have been spending a lot of this money at trade shows and things that haven't really panned out. And then he was just talking about how they're all upping their Facebook ad game because of the geo-targeting and the ability to do things. And so you can get your message in front of people instead of being at trade shows. Instead of spending $50,000 to be there, you actually spend $50,000 in targeted ads at people that would be at trade shows. You know, it just kind of...
Right. Well, the interesting thing about it too is like, it's like all major historical events, right? And that's not to take any of the tragedy of COVID off and just say, oh, it's a historical event, right? World War II was a historical event and 50 million people died, right? So, but whenever there's a massive change, you know, there's always at least something positive we can look to. And one of the more positive things I think we can look to over the last year is things that were just taken as, I wouldn't even say anything more than just tradition, right? You couldn't even call it anything that. Like it was traditional to go fly to all your clients. It was traditional to basically go to the conferences you went to every year. It was so many things were unquestioned.
Right.
And I think to a large extent, I'm being honest, because people, if they scratched under it, they didn't really know what the answer was, right? And it would disturb them. And they'd be like, well, what do you mean, right? And I kind of like traveling and I like my business dinners and, you know, whatever it is. So I think that's really, really strong. But like I said, I think there's some things you can do even now while you're waiting for all those chips to fall. Like, and one of the more interesting ones, I think, is everybody needs to become a better writer. I said this to one of my clients the other day, and because it just popped into my head. This is about 6 months ago in the kind of the bad throes of COVID fall, early winter.
Right.
And we were joking about it. And he said back to me, he says, you know, that's hilarious. He says, I've realized a lot of my colleagues are a lot dumber than I thought they were, because they can't grab me in the hallway and kind of viscerally convince me. Now the downside is, the flip side is, you have to manage that if you're an owner, because not everyone is as good at fighting for attention in a Zoom call.
Right.
Right. Nor are they as good at writing. And so you've got to figure out, like, okay, is that somebody I have to kind of call every once in a while and check what's up with them? That kind of thing. But if you look macro, everybody has to get better at writing. Everybody does. Because you got, like you mentioned, Facebook, you've got digital, you've got all these initiatives that really at their center, they're about writing. And that's not taking anything away from a video podcast or a YouTube channel.
Right.
But we all know, and you know this too, the weight that's required to do a show is way higher than it is to write a good piece of content. You know what I mean? Like production quality and all the other stuff. And so it's not like you can just say, well, I'm good on camera, so I'll just go do YouTube and I won't write well. That's not going to fly.
100. And you got to do it both. You got to do it all, guys. You got to learn how to write better. And I think that's the thing that everyone, like you said, is basically their own content creator. If you're a brand, if you're a personal brand, if you're a huge brand, and you're missing the boat, guys, if you aren't telling the story. You're missing the boat if you aren't telling the stories of struggle, the stories of glory, the stories of fun, and also promoting the heck out of contests and giving, guys. I can't tell you guys enough how much that can lead to more than you ever realize by coming up with campaigns of giving, whether you're giving to nonprofits, whether you're actually giving product out to customers, giving them new releases of your newest stuff. The giving aspect of social has always won. Even a $5 gift card, Sean, has brought engagements beyond anything you believe for just $5. And then the person that wins feels good when they're drinking the Starbucks. Oh, that brand rewarded me for just because they engage with me. And those things never die. I think, you know, that's the thing, like you said, Sean, and the most important thing, guys, is to know that you can get better by just repeating. Nothing in life gets better just by, you know, doing it one time. Yeah, so put in the work on whatever you're trying to do. But now, my man, Sean, we're about to take you into our top 10. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Apple or Android?
Apple.
Apple. Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix.
Netflix. Instagram or Facebook?
Oh, Instagram. Facebook's full of stuff everybody wants to ignore these days. Right. Instagram's much better. Rather look at pictures than everybody's little speech.
The shares and all that. Yeah, the videos, links, and all that stuff. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the downside and positive of Facebook, is they're so easy to share stuff. So your stuff could go viral, but then as a user, the negative is that it's just full of links and stuff. It's not full of content that you like. So give us the Instagram a shout out, just in case one people want to follow you today.
Oh, it's just a Cascade Insights. It's pretty easy. So if you search Cascade Insights, you'll get there.
And we'll put that in the show note, guys. Chicken or steak if you're thinking about a good meal?
Steak.
Steak. Laptop or smartphone?
Laptop.
Laptop. Spotify or Pandora?
Spotify.
Boom. Movies or video games?
Ooh, depends on the mood. It depends a little bit on the mood. But video games are a close second, but movies.
Movies, because you could do it with the wifey and just and
totally right, more diversity. Exactly. It's more communal, right?
More communal. I like that word. Reading books or listening to books?
Oh, reading.
Reading. Stocks or real estate if you're thinking about another types of investments beside the business?
Stocks.
Stocks, baby. Get that liquid. Having a good day on the stock market today. It's been painful. It's up and down, baby. It's up and down, baby. Oceans or lakes?
Lakes.
Lakes. Do you have a favorite lake?
Yeah. It's not anybody would have heard of. North Fork Reservoir. It's about 18 minutes from my house, and I can hook up my boat and probably, if I left this, if I opened the door right now and walked out to the boat, I could have a rod in the water in about 22 minutes.
Oh, that's awesome.
Fishing for trout. So it's kind of the home lake. It's not a big lake.
Right.
But it's the home lake that I know how to fish pretty well, and it's right next door. So I can get
there. So convenient. It's so convenient for someone like yourself that, you know, we're doing a lot of things. You got a business. You got lots of things going. You want to be efficient too with your time, right? It's cool.
Yeah. Well, it's just nice. It's just nice to be somewhere close you can fish. I love fishing. So I would drive farther, but right. For sure. But like if I've just got time on a Friday afternoon, it's a quick place to go. So
and nothing like fishing too to kind of reset the mind too. Meditation and kind of.
Absolutely.
The chase of the game, baby. So when you're waking up in the morning, Sean, you're getting yourself ready for the day. Why do you love being you?
Why do I love being me?
Yeah.
I love learning. Honestly. I mean, I think that's it's small and it's simple, but it's true. If there was like, you know, reality TV on my life, right. You'd probably watch me get up in the morning and I'd be reading a book. And then I'd go from reading a book to probably like searching up something I wanted to kind of educate myself on. And then I own a business that's a research firm plus marketing services. So we're constantly out studying and looking at stuff. And then if you get to the evening, we're usually, you know, trying to help our kids learn stuff or educate ourselves on what's going on around the world or, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a lot of who I am. And if I'm not learning, I'm trying to teach somebody what I learned yesterday, you know?
That's awesome too, because there's something about teaching people that's it's hard to do for some people. And that's one of the biggest challenges of an entrepreneur sometimes is teaching the team and motivating and keeping them going. But that's what Charlie Munger would say. Life is good when you're learning. You're constantly learning, challenging yourself. And you know, someone like 93 years old that's running Berkshire Hathaway still will tell you that they got their big meeting coming up here. My dad thinks it might be their last one for Berkshire Hathaway.
One thing about what you just said, you know, the interesting thing about firm ownership is that there's a million things that kill somebody from getting big as a service firm owner. But one of the things definitely is, you know, you have to constantly be giving away what you own. Like when you're one person, you own everything. You own finances and delivery and everything. And then really, if you look at it, like progressively as you grow, you're giving away chunks of things. Now, some of it you might have done poorly, but it was acceptable. Right. Some of it would have been awesome, but you still have to give it away. Yes. And the kernel there, I think, that a lot of service firm owners struggle with is they think it's about training and it's really about apprenticeship to me. Mm-hmm. Meaning like training by definition, and I have no problem with training. I was a trainer. I love training. I love education, right? But training presumes you kind of like sit somebody down for about 2 days or 2 hours or 2 weeks. There's like this defined window and, you know, they pass, they get a certification. The training's over. And then they're off and doing stuff. And the reality is for anything that's like remotely even somewhat complicated from a services standpoint, you know what I mean? Like not taking anything away from a landscaping business, but something more complicated than mowing the lawn, let's say, right? Anything more complicated, it's apprenticeship. Yes. You as the owner have to constantly be looking out and doing all this like micro engagement and helpfulness, but not in this overbearing way. Not in this like crazy way. You have to be like, hi, I'm here to help. Yes. And what's really interesting on that, and then I'll let you comment or pull stuff out of this you might want to talk about, is as the business grows, you have to get like even more focused about that because the bigger your org chart is, the harder it is for you, the owner, to reach down three levels and have the employee not go, everything's fine, sir. Yeah. Everything's great, sir. Right. You know what I mean? Like, or, you know, because you're the boss, the grand boss, the great grand boss at that point. Yet one fundamental thing hasn't changed. Probably you still probably know your market and what you deliver with this kind of deep sense that by definition, everybody else in the building doesn't have because they haven't been doing it as long as you, right? Yep. They haven't been in the space. Right. So you got to figure out how to be that person that's not overbearing, that's educational, that's helpful. And not think like, well, the minute I set up this training program and they shove everybody through it, everything's going to be awesome. Because what happens to those businesses is 5 years later, they're like, why did quality decline? Why does everything suck? Why are all the customers leave, right? And it's like, well, because you never really gave up the thing of yourself to the company that really made it successful in the beginning. You just kind of walled yourself off behind this thing. Right. So that's a big deal.
It's so true. You made so many great points. And a point I'll give to you guys too is I, early on, because I was an adopter to Zoom, started creating training courses where I would just do screen share trainings and like put them into our own database of Dropbox so that anyone that comes in our team, guys, they get a Dropbox link, they get to self-educate, and then we kind of do the same thing, kind of just checking on them, checking on their work, and actually let them get to work, you know? And I find that that's usually the best, in our business, the best thing for them to do is get to work on the stuff you've learned, make some errors, let's learn together. But you're absolutely right. I think that as your organization gets bigger, it becomes very hard to do, and especially in the ad agency world, Sean, I know working with a lot of different agencies ourselves, a lot of times what you'll see is, big boss comes in, closes the deal, passes it off to a junior executive. Never see that big boss again, ever. Client does never see the big boss ever again. And that's a big frustration in that business. That's why I feel like there's a lot of turnover in that business, is because the junior account executives turn over a lot too. And then now all of a sudden this get rep here, this, they got 10 different reps over the last 5 years. And instead of the big boss just being the big boss, just checking in on them the whole time, they would have probably kept that client, you know? And, just interesting in ad agency world, you know, if they had done that same relationship and just been so transparent with the client that's paying them all this money instead of passing off junior AEs, which tend to turn over, guys, men that like 1 or 2 years, they tend to be like a new person. And this big agency finally says, hey, you know what? I'm going to go to someone new. You know, and it tends to just happen after 5 years. I'm going to someone new. If the big boss had been there every quarter saying, hey, guys, we're working on this and we got this and we got this new person that's working expert, that client stays a lot. I think it has a higher attrition if they have that transparency.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think on the agency side or really any services firm that grows, you know, substantially, there's that huge problem with how do you let the client feel like they're being cared for by high value people?
Right.
But let's not leave the elephant in the room out of there. That high value person might bill out at $300 an hour, $350 an hour, $250. The client doesn't want that $300 an hour person doing the job. So the client, you know, it's one of the interesting things about services.
So true.
I find this fascinating over the years. A lot of services firms work with a lot of product firms because product firms, it's not that there's more product firms than service firms. It's just, you know, product firms tend to have slightly bigger budgets than service firms. They tend to be bigger companies. So I don't have this on authority, but I've just observed this over the years. There seems to be, you know, a typical relationship of services company helping product company. When you talk about the agency thing, it's less common to see agency working with large services company, kind of that kind of thing. And so, Absolutely. And there's a million reasons for that that are beyond size. But the reason I bring that up is, yes, the service companies have something to keep in mind when they have those engagements. But one of the things that's fascinating too is the product companies you're serving usually have zero idea of how your own business model works. So one of the things you have to do, exactly to your point about transparency, is sometimes you just have to say it. You have to say out loud,
like, there's a lot
the
of
thing they don't, this. They really don't know. I'm not saying they're not smart. They're super smart. Yeah. They're some mega sized product company,
right?
But they don't know your business model. So you have to say things like, hey, this is what Joe's going to do in this relationship or Mary.
Yeah.
But let's be clear. Mary's our longest standing employee and would bill out at roughly X, right? Or you don't even maybe say get so specific, but you kind of something and you say, but Joe or Mary have worked and apprenticed so-and-so for a long time. And this is the way your relationship's going to be. But you're right. A lot of it is more like shadow boxing the agency does where they're like, no, Joe will be around.
Right.
Joe.
Oh yeah. He's always available. Yeah.
He's always available. That's a turnkey thing.
He's always available.
Right. Right. And Joe's not available. And so, and there's a million things like that, honestly, that come into play, you know? But anyway, that's a topic. That's a different topic of kind of like the blinders your clients have about how services firms work.
Right. And it's good to have that transparency, guys. If you are a service-based thing, I think that's a good point, Sean, that you mentioned is just kind of how the relationship works. Because they don't want that $350 per hour person. Let's just be real. Do you think you'll ever retire from the game of entrepreneurship and hang it up?
Oh, Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know. It's funny. When you said entrepreneurship, that's a different question to answer than retire from owning a business.
100%.
If you answer me retire from owning a business, yeah, sure. someday, only because like, I'm like everybody else. I've got hobbies I'd like to spend more time on or whatever, but I don't think two things will never really change for me. Like even when I'm, but, well, I'll give you, this is a, probably a good example. Like, so I was up on the hill skiing the other day, love to ski. Nice. And I heard this story about some guy at the other ski resort on the mountain. We ski at Timberline a lot on Mount Hood. There's a friendly plug for those guys. But anyway, the other resort's Meadows, and this guy, which is a fine place too. But this guy was 90 and he had just retired from teaching kids how to ski from 60 to 90. He started at 60. And I'm like, dude, you're my idol. Like if I, so I don't really want to stop entrepreneuring to turn it into a verb, right? And I don't really want to stop teaching and helping people learn stuff. There might come a day where I don't really want to have like a business wrapped around all that, you know. It'd be nice to just give back, but I'm pathologically opposed to the idea that the whole reason I would ever retire is to just play golf, right, or to just sit and on my deck and have chips and beverages, right? I mean, I just I can't do that. I just feel like, and it's not about a frenetic thing to go do a ton. I mean, I'm 50. Things have slowed down a little bit from 20. I'm sure they'll be slower when I'm 80. Right. But like, but I don't see a need to just stop giving back at that point. You just give back a little less, before, because you got to take a nap in the afternoon. But other than that, you know, it's all good, you know?
It's a marathon, baby. That's the truth about entrepreneurship. If you're in the game, it's a marathon. And so it's like you wake up the next day, you put in the work, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that the business might change, but you'll always have that game going, the entrepreneurship game, and whether you're investing, giving back, and whatever that looks like, keeps your mind going. Do you have a tool or an app that keeps you in line with the business? I mean, is there an app or a tool that helps you keep things productive? And
yeah, well, there's a few. I mean, I don't I don't know. These are, there's not like I have one single thing that I like turn to every single day, but just some that we use a lot of. I use a lot of Asana, which is a good task management, project management tool we use. I use a lot of mind maps. That's maybe slightly non-traditional. There's a note-taking app called Bear that I use that's on the Mac that's really slick. Oh, nice. And good. But no, I mean, a lot of different apps have floated in and out of my life over the years, right? I don't know if there's any that I could say. I mean, outside of email and calendar, what have I used for 20 straight years? I don't know. I mean, you know, you got to keep that tool set fresh, because every couple of years there's something that kind of is a really useful tool to use. But that's some of the stuff I use daily.
I love that, dude. Asana, mind maps, Bear, guys, check that out. If you could sit down to a steak dinner with anyone in the world, who would you want to have to chop it up with tonight?
So it's got to be somebody living, basically.
It doesn't matter.
Right?
It doesn't matter. We've had all different kinds of answers, to be honest with you, Sean.
That's a good question. I would say, I'm a pretty faith-filled guy. I'm a Christian. I'd have lots of questions for Jesus. So sure, that'd be great. But outside of that, all good questions, by the way, but like, I just have lots of questions. But the other one would probably be Churchill.
That was a recent one we had too, not too long ago. It was telling us all about Churchill. I kind of forget as the power that the gentleman had.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, beyond being one of the more quotable individuals in the world, right. You know, he lived through some very interesting times, and he wasn't perfect by any means, but definitely he would be one of those guys.
And I found out he had a really interesting sense of humor that I never really knew, I guess.
He did.
And it came out in different ways. It, at the time, it was not looked at. It was unique at the time, because people didn't talk like that when they were in such power. But he would use comedy to kind of break things, even though he was, you know, doing some crazy stuff in some cases. Very interesting story, guys. Check it out. Has there been a book that has changed your life? Has there been something you either reread? Obviously, you got the Bible, but is there another book that kind of goes with that you either reread or you kind of have at your heart throughout your days?
I don't know if there's one individual book, because I read a ton. Like my,
it's hard when you read a lot.
I mean, like my... My Kindle book count, I just pulled it up, is 1,141 books and counting. So it would be very, very hard for me to say a single book. I could say, but what I'll say this, I'll say I read certain categories of books for specific reasons. So I'll be quick with this. Like, science fiction is great because it kind of extends the boundaries of your mind and like a little bit what's possible. Especially hard science fiction will do that, kind of like, and we live in the technology sector, so that's always cool to read. Plus, who doesn't like to read about a space battle anyway? Secondly, lots of history, a little more military or political history, because one of the things I really enjoy watching is, and this is the other reason I read a fair amount of biographies too, is, look, people aren't that much different than they were, you know, 2,000 years ago, some Roman guy walking along a Roman road, you know what I mean, to Naples.
Right.
We are not really, we haven't evolved in how we react to stimuli that much. And so it can be incredibly educational to go back. And sure, you can learn lessons from history and all those kinds of things. But I find as I've gotten older, one of the things I find even more interesting is to watch how human beings react to various things. And it gives you perspective. I mean, every year there's somebody who says, you know, with hyperbole, this is the worst, you know, or this is the whatever, you know, fill in the Mad Lib. History tells you there's a pretty high bar for this is the worst. And even when it is the worst or it exceeds the worst, history and study of the human condition and all that can teach you that we can get over that.
Right.
We can move forward. We have the ability in us to get around some very horrible things that have happened and create some wonderful things. I don't know, like I said, probably when I was a younger man, I still do, you know, it's cool to watch like or read about some tank battle or some, you know, ocean fleet battle or whatever. But increasingly I find it's a great teacher for just how human beings have been, will be, and are today. And I think that's something any business leader should pay attention to.
I always think too, like that we are basically our little kid self, you know, it's like, if someone's acting a certain way, that's how we were when we were kids. That's just, you have to remind, we all kind of grew up, but we were all little kids at some point. I always remind myself of that when people act funny, you know, I would say, act funny. You guys are little kids there. Well, my man, I really appreciate your soul and energy, man. You've built an incredible business for yourself. And I think that, like I said, to all our guests, the world is full of abundance. And not only your life and full of the things that you want to do in your life, but where's also your favorite place for people to learn more about the business, so we can send some people there as well as also connect with you online.
Just look up my name. I think there's some like ex-professor that beats me in search results or something like that. But like, I think I'm still on the first page of Google. So like, if you look me up, you'll find Cascade Insights. And if you don't find Cascade Insights through me, just type Cascade Insights into Google and you'll end up in the right place. And then you can learn a little bit about the team we built here and what we do.
And we'll put that, guys, in the show notes as well, so you don't have to worry about that. Just click that link and check them out. Like I said, sir, we really appreciate you folks. You've been hanging out with Sean Campbell and Travis Too Tall and Huff. We want to thank you again for your time today, and let's keep being real.
What another epic episode. And if you enjoyed the episode today, can you please do me a favor and subscribe to our podcast, The Be Real Show, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform? And also take a little time today, if you don't mind, and give your boy T Huff a review. I would really super appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening today. Do you want to get featured on podcasts, guys? You can be a guest. And that's right. You have a story, and the people, the good folks at I Love Podcasts, that's ILUVpodcasts.com. Do that every single day. This is a new company, guys, in the space of podcast agency. And they realize a lot of the people in the space are just, it's just a commodity and they don't care. And these folks care. And I literally love Candy and the team at I Love Podcasts, and they are doing it right for their customers. So you guys can be a guest on a show. ilovepodcast.com. That's ilovepodcast.com. Let's go.